In Buchenwald today, 7 days after the liberation of the camp, men are still starving to death. More than 20,000 poor, famished prisoners are still watching their numbers steadily dwindling. They haven't eaten any water because the SS, cheated of their intention to slaughter the whole camp before leaving, had emptied the water tanks and cut all the mains as a typical parting gesture. Let me tell of Buchenwald as I saw it and as I was told of it. I saw and heard enough to write a book, to write many books. I talked to Frenchmen, Russians, and Germans in their own languages, to men who had endured this living death for up to 4 and 5 years. When I had passed through the imposing gates of this frightful monument to Nazism, I found myself in a vast compound built on a slope with row upon row of wooden huts disappearing down the hill. Just inside the gate, there was a large open space where, I was told, the prisoners used to be mustered for roll call. It was crowded with men and boys from every nation of Europe, though the majority were Russians, followed by Poles, Germans, many of them Jews, and Frenchmen. Most of them were dressed in prison garb, an awful travesty of pajamas with wide blue and white stripes. Most of them were so emaciated that they looked like terrible scarecrows. Through indescribable filth, for hygiene had almost ceased to exist, I went to one of the barracks where the occupants were so weak from lack of food that they were unable to go about outside. A four-tiered row of shelves ran the length of the 100-foot-long hut. Lying on them were several hundred poor caricatures of humanity which needed the hand of a 20th-century Goya to portray them in their awful, terrifying misery. In ghost-like voices they tried to speak to me, but hardly a sound came from their shrunken, cord-like throats. They were literally human skeletons. I could have made the fingers of one hand meet round the thighs of most of them. A hollow-eyed, emaciated German Jew hobbled across to me. He opened the door of a large cupboard just inside the door. Inside, about 20 corpses, piled high in a tangled heap, looked at me with glassy eyes. "Last night's crop," the man said, almost casually. "It will be the same tomorrow and the next day and the next day." That is the ghastly tragedy of Buchenwald. The wretched inmates have been freed from their Nazi tormentors, but they have not yet been freed from the horror of slow starvation. They are indeed getting more food than before, which is being taken from the neighboring German population. But they are still slowly starving to death, and each day adds to the awful toll of human life. A Frenchman leaned forward. He pointed to the man lying beside him, who was so weak he was unable to sit up. "There's nothing the matter with him," he said. "He just hasn't enough to eat. That's all." I felt indescribably guilty in the knowledge that I had had 2 good meals already and was going to have a third. This hut was only one of dozens, but I went into another. Most of its occupants were Frenchmen, sent to Buchenwald for having formed part of the resistance movement. Here I was given these staggering figures. In January, there were 61,000 men in the camp. In January, 6,477 died or were butchered. In February, there were 62,000. 5,614 died. In March, the number had risen to 82,000, of which 5,479 died. Between April the 3rd and 10th, 915 had died. As the Allies advanced through Germany, the SS, who ran this camp, made mass deportations further into Germany. When the Americans overran it, there were a mere 20,000 left. "So you see," the Frenchman who had given me these figures said, "now we are not particularly crowded. But at the worst time, we were 1,043 in this hut, which is 35 yards long by 9 wide." The bunks ran along both sides 4 deep. They were divided into partitions formed by the uprights, which were 6 feet apart. In each of these 6 feet sections, 10 to 12 men had slept jammed together like sardines. The hut was crawling with every conceivable form of vermin. Many of the men were suffering from dysentery. The details are too horrible to repeat. An old man came up to me. He was a Frenchman. He told me that he was a retired captain in the Marines. That was enough to bring me here, he quavered. I have been here 4 years, and now I am 73. 73, and enduring this indescribable hardship. The old man summed the whole matter up in 2 words. Scientific murder, he almost screamed it. That's what it's been, scientific murder. Give a man 800 calories a day for long enough and he'll die. Nothing is more certain. The old man told me many terrible things. How he was asked, he, an old man and an invalid, to donate 300 grams of his blood, which would be given to the German army and to Germans who had suffered injuries in bombing. What did I do? Why, I gave it. If I'd refused, the SS would have forced me to give 500 grams, and that would have killed me. The old man told me how they were all forced to sleep naked, winter and summer, and one blanket was shared by two. SS guards came round on tours of inspection to see that this inhuman order was carried out. The old man's eyes filled with tears as I said goodbye. Thank God the Americans came when they did, he said. Another few hours and they had plans to machine gun us all and blow up the camp. But we've been saved, and now soon, pray God, we shall be able to go to our homes again. My next call was at a very different type of building called, cynically, the Hygiene Institute of the Waffen-SS. Here were immaculate laboratories where, my guide told me, SS doctors used human material for their researches. They made experiments with typhus germs on prisoners, and 80% of them died. But what did it matter? Human life was cheap. And then, after thinking that there was nothing much worse possible, I saw the really terrible section of Buchenwald. I was taken to the crematorium. A small building with a tall chimney was surrounded by a courtyard with a high wall. I entered, and in the yard the first thing I saw was a gallows. This was where prisoners, guilty of the slightest misdemeanors, were hanged. In the corner of the yard was a big pile of calcined human bones. I entered the crematorium itself. A row of ovens lined one wall. The doors were open, and inside were partially burned bodies, two or three in each oven. On the wall was a disgustingly cynical piece of German doggerel verse, of which this is a literal translation. No vile worms shall feed upon my body. Pure flames shall devour it. I have always loved warmth and light. Therefore, burn me and do not bury me. They showed me the small urns and cardboard boxes in which the ashes were put and sent to the family of the murdered man, thus acting as the sole notification of his awful fate. Outside, in another section of the yard, I saw the most gruesome sight of all. Piled high was a tangled heap of naked corpses awaiting cremation. The bones protruded through their poor, wasted frames. Their prison numbers showed blue on their parchment flesh, where they had been tattooed on the arms, chest, and thighs. That is nothing like a normal day's output, a Russian said to me. Generally, it's several hundred. The ovens burned from 6 in the morning until midnight. Suddenly, I heard a woman weeping bitterly. I looked round. A German girl was being held by 2 Belgian soldiers. She was, or had been, a member of the BDM, the Nazi organization of German girls. The Belgians were forcing her to see for herself these terrible crimes committed by the party of which she had been a member. Oh, it is terrible what they have done. It is terrible, she wailed. Maybe she didn't know the enormities committed by the infamous party she had served. At any rate, she was now being forced to see them, and I wish every German in Germany could be forced to do the same. And then I went down into the slaughterhouse below the crematorium, the most ghastly example of dreadful Nazi efficiency that could well be imagined. Here it was that many poor victims met their death. Hooks were fixed round the walls about 7 feet from the ground. On them, the victims were hanged. Before they fled, the SS tried to efface the signs of their guilt by hasty and most evident whitewashing of the walls. But they still left their gruesome traces. In the corner was a lift on which the bodies of the victims were piled and which carried them up into the crematorium. In another wall was a big electric fan which made such a noise that no cries could be heard. And indeed, the SS had kept their grisly work quiet. A Czech with whom I talked in this fearful charnel house, I hesitate to use such a melodramatic word, but no other seems to fit the purpose. This Czech told me that he had been in Buchenwald for over a year and had never known of this room's existence. Oh yes, the SS were thorough, as witnessed the hose which was there to wash away the traces of their deeds. I heard so much that it is impossible to tell it all, even if I were to write a book. There were stories such as that of the public hanging of a Pole who had escaped and had been recaptured. A public hanging at which the whole camp had to attend, including 150 children, the youngest of whom was only 3 years old. For there were children in this terrible place as well. Or of another Czech who told me not that his father and two brothers were dead, but, as we looked at those ghastly ovens, that they had been burned. And yet many of the inmates of Buchenwald, who had been at Germany's two other infamous camps, Auschwitz in Silesia and Dachau near Munich, told me that Buchenwald was by far the best of the three. God only knows what the other two were like.